Cambridge School Board, March 28, 2011.
Comments made to me in that meeting that I want to put in the public record that are not here. And those comments were that there are teachers in the school that don't want me here. I want that spelled out clearly in the minutes. Thank you. Any comments?
Yeah, I was also told I wasn't wanted either, so I'll make sure that's all good too.
Okay, you ready to have to correct the minutes? Assume Kate will correct them appropriately. Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Public comments. Okay, there'll be another time at the end of the meeting. Item 5, Superintendent and Administrator Reports.
The only issue that I have is the meetings, that tomorrow's meeting will be canceled. The Budget Audit Committee will be canceled tomorrow and on the 11th. And on the 4th, the Goals Meeting will be the next discussion of the budget. So April 4th. Will be the next discussion of the budget. We still don't have anything concrete from the state at this point. That's why we're not meeting tomorrow.
Well, I think we're probably all in shock that we actually have a budget.
Okay. I get to go first?
Yes.
Because I brought company. If you go to the elementary school report, my first topic is literacy update. And the two bullet points are K-6 curriculum maps and the RTI plan. These two initiatives were begun last year in the 09-10 school year. And a couple of the things we had decided that we needed to do was to review, evaluate, and make recommendations regarding reading and literacy. We also plan to define and write a response to intervention plan, or RTI, to identify our struggling readers and prescribe interventions for those readers. Stephanie Finito, who this board met in the end of June last year, had started working with us to evaluate some of those things throughout the year, and then she's been working with us this year. And she works heavily with Kelly Tolman, who is our reading coordinator, and they're going to present where we've come with the curriculum map since June, as well as the RTI plan.
Handout is much bigger this time to show you just how much you've done.
We promise we won't go over it page by page by page, unless you really want to. I will say, while Kelly is passing out, that so much work so much work has gone into this from both the reading department, the elementary teachers, Stephanie, and. Here we go.
Okay. We won't go over every page, but we wanted to give you every page to have as a background. Our two goals were RTI, developing the response intervention plan, and developing the curriculum, K-6. Last time I was here, I just gave you a year at a glance outline that just had the basic topics for K-6, and now there's actually a curriculum. The majority of these pages, you start from the back and go up. The year at a glance maps are here, K-6, as well as every monthly map for every grade level, so that you can see September through June, K-6, what the curriculum is, how it's covered, how it's spiraling and adding on across the grade levels. We wanted to tackle reading instruction this year, and we've done that, and we've also added in spelling component K-6 as well, to make sure that was aligned and articulated and didn't have any gaps as well. So the bulk of this document is that curriculum that has reading and spelling. Writing's coming. That'll be the next thing that we work on. The classroom teachers met almost every month throughout the year with myself and usually with Kelly, and we created this together. So this is something that everyone has, everyone works from. And always is considered an in-progress kind of document as we map it every year and figure out what's working, what's not working, and the students that come to us, how we have to adapt. So that's the majority of the document that you can flip through and certainly have as a reference and ask us any questions you have. But the main part that we really want to talk about are the first couple of pages, which are the response to intervention plan and why we have this curriculum. So I'll start. And the first page, if you go to the first page, this is a Cliff Notes version of the response to intervention plan. It's one page outline so that it's very clear. If you look at the RTI research, if you look on the web of the available information, everyone uses this kind of triangle as a template. And so that's why we decided to put it in our plan here as well, so that it's easy to map between what you see in the research and what you see in the plan. It outlines our tiers of instruction. RTI is requiring that we have three tiers for students. The first tier is at the bottom. It's meant to be the biggest, and that represents classroom literacy instruction. And we put very briefly, every classroom has a 90-minute block, which is a requirement of RTI. There's whole group teaching, small group teaching, as well as individual practice for students for reading, writing, and word work components. We have our maps that everyone's using. We've utilized the program Good Habits, Great Readers, which is a research-based program for a reading curriculum, and also the STEC-LONG spelling series K-6. So both of those programs are actually K-5. Those programs are aligned across all the grade levels. The bubble at the little star towards the right side of it, I just want to clarify, that should be an 8 and say 80%, and the copies, it looks like it may be a 3. RTI tells us that we want to target 80% of our kids needing Tier 1 instruction alone, so that the instruction that we have would be successful for kids to be successful at 80% of the time. So every child gets Tier 1 instruction, but that 80% means we want at least 80% of our kids to need that alone and not need any extra RTI intervention or AIS teaching. For kids that are struggling and they're not able to successfully handle the work in the classroom, then they can get either Tier 2 or Tier 3 supplemental instruction. That's on top of the triangle to show that it is instruction on top of what the classroom teacher is giving in the classroom. And this supportive work comes outside of the 90-minute block. If it's Tier 2, we just outlined briefly, students get 2 to 4 days of extra support, half hour each time outside of the block. There's Fountas and Pinnell level literacy intervention program are used, as well as other research-based strategies depending on what the students need. And they are progress monitored or given assessments weekly to make sure that the program is working. Research wants us to target about 15% of the kids there, so that 15% of kids need Tier 2 instruction, and then if you look up at Tier 3, only about 5% of Tier 3. So it's trying to give us a percentage to get a target. How can we make the curriculum best or most aligned so that most of the kids do well with this instruction alone, and then a few get Tier 2 and Tier 3?
Prior to this year, we didn't have the 90-minute literacy block. So that was a big change in September, that when we had to do the schedule this year, we literally sat down and worked a 90-minute reading block into each teacher's schedule. So those kids, so every child in Tier 1 is getting that 90-minute block. And then the Tier 2 and Tier 3 get added time above and beyond.
Is that based on the tests that they take for?
And do you want to talk about the benchmark assessments? Okay.
If you look at the arrow on the side, that outlines very briefly the assessment piece. RTI requires that we screen students 3 times a year, and we use those screening measures to then place them into a particular tier based on their performance as well as what the teachers recommend. If you skip to page 3 in the packet, this is our assessment calendar. It gives you the dates for the 3 times a year that we assess the students, as well as what assessments they are given depending on their particular grade. We use DIBELS, which are quick 1-minute fluency-based measures across basic reading skills, as well as Fountas and Pinnell benchmarks, which focuses more on connected text reading and comprehension. So together, kind of getting at both areas of reading. Based on their performance on these assessments, we sit down and we decide with the data, what tier should they be in? Are they doing fine, meeting grade level expectations, and they would just be tier one? They were a little below grade level, tier two, far below grade level, then they would be considered tier three. And if you turn one more page, the next couple of pages outline exactly what the qualifications are to be a tier two or a tier three student. We took this from the research. Dibbles has recommendations based on their assessments as well as Faustus and Pinnell. We just combined them on one chart so that the classroom teachers knew what the expectations were. And then after the benchmarks, when we talked about students, it's very clear where their results were and where we put them for the best instruction. And you have all of those K-6 because they change.
So every child in our school has this sheet of paper with all of their data on it, which I keep, the classroom teacher keeps, and you can clearly see a lot of the times if they land in tier one, two, or three. If there's some that land more in two versus three, then we err on the side of the majority of rows that they fall in because there are so many subtests in with Dibbles. But every single student in our school has one of these sheets that we use as a resource to determine where they fall in the tiers.
So every child, whether tier one, tier two, or tier three, is benchmark assessed three times.
Right.
The kids within tier two and tier three, depending on what their needs, may be
right.
tested, progress monitored every week or every 10 days or
yeah, right. During the three benchmark periods, the reading department dibbles the entire school. We call it the SWAT team approach. So we go in the classrooms, and it took us about a week and a half the last benchmark. The first benchmark took a couple weeks. We got used to it. The second time, we knew what we were doing. It took about a week and a couple days to get through the entire elementary, dibbling every single child. We then also do a Faustus and Pinnell running record on all of our AIS students, which are the Tier 2 and Tier 3 kids. The classroom teacher does a running record on all Tier 1 students left in their class, and we take all of that information together along with teacher recommendation to determine that.
It's fluid as well, so that means you can test out, test back in, you know.
Especially with the progress monitoring piece. If you're a Tier 3 student, you get progress monitored every 10 instructional days. So our Dibbles sheets have graphs on the front that you can either see the progress is going up, or the progress is inconsistent, or it's going down and we need to apply a new form of intervention that isn't working. And then the Tier 2 students are progress monitored once a month, and you can see the same progress or same inconsistency or lack thereof progress. So they're always being, the Tier 2 and Tier 3 students are always being progress monitored to either be able to test out or have to test in or get a different type of intervention.
And this is fully implemented now?
Mm-hmm. This is in year one. On the second page, we gave you on the first page what the target percentages were, what RTI was hoping for. On the second page are what our actual percentages are for tier one, tier two.
Yep. So I took all of the all of our students' data, and I'll start at the top. The tier three students, the goal is to be less than 5% at each grade level, and we have met that goal at every grade level, 5% in first grade or tier three, 5% in second, and so on. You can see I also did school-wide average at the bottom, so first through sixth in average we are 3%, so we are below the 5%, which is good. When you go down to tier two, we want 15% or less of the students to be tier two. First grade is above that number at 24%, but first grade is the year where students are learning to read, and that is expected. That's where they're starting to put all of the strategies together to learn to read, and sometimes it takes longer for them to get that, and some kids aren't as mature, and when it clicks, and so you want to be able to see that percentage go down as the years go on, and it does that. It starts at 24, and in sixth grade we have 6% in tier two. And school-wide average is 15%, so we are right on for our school-wide average. We also said there that the borderline students are also placed in tier two. I always err on the side of wanting to give the child more help. So the numbers might even look a little bit bigger in some of the areas, because if they're a borderline student, that sometimes they're showing difficulty, sometimes they're not, and I want them to be able to be strong and be able to perform 100% in the classroom without that extra help. So I'm more apt to take them into tier two and get them the more reading before they're a tier one solely. And then at tier one, we want 80% of our students or more to be in tier one, and our 71% in first grade is lower, like I had said, in the tier two part solely because that's where they're learning how to read. Our first grade class is also a smaller class. There's only 54 students in that class, so you know, one child makes up for a big percent if they're having trouble. So first grade is the year we're working on. And then school-wide average is 82%, so we're above our 80% goal for all of our students being in tier one. And I didn't mention kindergarten in any of these numbers because on the side arrow, you can see that we do a different model in kindergarten where the reading teachers push into the classroom for the first two benchmarks and start to introduce the letters and the sounds and all of the foundation of reading. And then once we hit the third benchmark, that's when the more formal RTI process will start to be used, and we'll take the data from that third benchmark scores to be able to roll them into first grade to see where they should fall for the beginning of first grade instruction.
So is this data like the second time you tested them during the year, or is this the
third? It's current, right now. This person, this data, yeah.
Is it Friday?
Yes.
That's what he was working on.
When the students in tiers two and three are receiving the additional instruction, what are they missing? Like, when does that occur during the day?
It occurs outside of their 90-minute reading block. Sometimes the teachers are working on maybe another reading activity. They could be working on another piece of curriculum. They're not missing out on math or science.
So the rest of them are getting their tier one 90-minute reading block?
Everyone gets that 90 minutes. And that's a big change. And I think that's a big key piece of where I think we're going to start to see a lot of improvement. Just that 90-minute block, putting that piece into the schedule is a huge piece. And the work that the classroom teachers have done on this to make it work, to make the 90-minute reading block work, to bring in centers into their classroom, it's been a lot of work.
That's what's in addition to, they're not received, or it's outside of the 90-minute block, and they're not receiving any direct instruction because they're doing centers or happening at that time, other activities that could be more enriching to other students that are left in the classroom, but never any direct instruction in any core subjects.
And it's the same, their AIS reading time is the same every day, so they can plan enrichment activities or other activities during those times. It's not like you're going to have AIS at 2 o'clock one day and 7 o'clock the next day or 9 o'clock the next day. It's always the same. That's built into their schedule as well.
So this is what we have here is this is spelling and reading, but not writing?
This is reading and spelling. Yes, this isn't writing yet. That will be what we tackle next. This was a lot of work. So we wanted to do reading first. Then we added in spelling, and then our next, I imagine, for next year, we'll be adding the writing, making sure the writing is mapped and aligned as well.
Yep.
And that would be mapped in the 90-minute block as well?
Some of it, definitely. Writing instruction can certainly be in the 90-minute block. I know a lot of teachers are also pulling it into the content areas for social studies and science as well. We've already started to map research projects and the research skills for that, too.
The literacy team is the team that really decided how to prioritize what we needed to have first. And we kept going back to reading. And there was a lot of, it wasn't even debate. It was, I remember one member of the team saying, I really want to focus on writing, but we really have to put the reading piece in place first. And so that's where we went.
Absolutely. That makes the most sense. The reason I asked what they're missing is because, I mean, it would be great to be able to do this in all the no content in this. But then obviously I would guess that most of the tier three students are going to overlap. The readers are going to also be the writers, and it's also going to be the kids in, you know, in science and math. And that's why, I mean, and the, where do you do this? What do you exclude? That's just inherent in the limited day.
Well, in addition to Stephanie's work with the classroom teachers as well as the reading teachers, she's done after-school workshops for us. And based on this 90-minute block and the adjustment, not as much in the primary, but with fourth and fifth and sixth grade teachers, it's that how do we, you know, how are we going to get this content in? So one of the areas that we're starting to work on as we move forward is content area reading instruction, so that you are doing reading, you're learning how to read those textbooks and using strategies for reading as you're doing the content area work. So you can kind of cover both, because that is basically what those tests are reading. Same thing when you get to Regents exams. You really need to be a good reader to be able to tackle the questions, whether it's math or science or social studies. Or
great.
Well, thank you to the classroom teachers and to Kelly and the other reading teachers and to Stephanie. Stephanie's the guidance, but everybody really had to put it in, and they have done a lot of work.
That's really wonderful. That's great. Congratulations.
I just made the charts. They're doing it every day.
But let me say something about Stephanie.
Oh, here we go.
I go all over the place. Like, I will sit at a meeting with her, and I just say all this stuff. And the next day, everything I said comes into this chart, as if I said it so beautifully. And I didn't. She just takes all the points and she, my divergent thinking, and she's able to make it all into a chart.
Make a chart.
Like, that's what I meant. That's what I meant to say. So thank you to that. But the teachers have worked so hard on this. They've sat at the team meetings. They've had to give up some things that they did traditionally, and it's not always easy to change and to listen to other things and to try new things, and they've been pretty good across the board, giving things a shot.
Yes.
Can I just comment?
Please.
I just came to support Kelly and Stephanie in their presentation and to let the board know how much we appreciate what they do on behalf of our students and for us as teachers. The three of us, I know, and others have taken advantage of all the after-school workshops that Stephanie has provided for us. And she's always available. If she's not in school, then we can email her, and she always gets right back with any information that we need. So we do appreciate the time that she spends at our school for our students. And we've already talked about maybe some curriculum work that can be done in the summer. That could be productive as far as starting the new school year off on the right foot. So that we do really appreciate all that she's done, and it's wonderful to have her expertise at our school.
I think you have some very happy people in front of what we're hearing.
That's great. That's great.
We want to keep you happy.
You don't have to, but it's not your job.
could I just make
sure.
A question? Again, too, we're here in support of Stephanie and Kelly, and I know they've been a great resource for me this year. Both Stephanie and Kelly are in my room, and the kids know who they are. They've been a wonderful resource, and it's been a long journey to work on this, but I think a beneficial one for everyone involved. We're all using common language, which I think is important in our reading program now. I think the kids are excited about reading. Reading is becoming a good habit, given, and that's what we're teaching from the curriculum. And I think it shows if they came or heard or knew about our reading day for PARC. We had a wonderful response back then. It was just such a warm, wonderful feeling to see the importance of reading, just at home, here in school, with the teachers. So I feel it's really showing what hard work we're doing. And kids are excited.
That kind of enthusiasm came from that. And what we particularly like speaking for myself at least, is that this is very measurable. The progress is quantifiable. And for us, it's really nice to see that, that they're getting assessed so regularly. We can watch the progress.
There's always a flip side to that. So let me ask. So an over-reliance on metrics, right, is probably some people in this room have also identified as an issue. So what are the, you know, what are the shortcomings of this? Is it all, you know, the land of milk and honey, or are there, what's the biggest shortcoming?
I was going to say, it's a lot of time and a lot of, I mean, these numbers just don't appear. We are always assessing these kids, and it is taking away from instruction. Sometimes I feel like, oh, I'd rather be teaching a kid right now how to read versus testing them. But it's giving me the information that I need to be able to then instruct them better. I just have to keep telling myself that. Especially because the running records versus DIPLS testing are two totally different scenarios. A running record, you're listening to a student read. I can see what kind of errors they're making. I can use that to guide my instruction. Where DIPLS is just like 1 minute of set the timer and go. It doesn't seem very warm, you know, the kids come in, go. And they do it, they leave, the next one comes in, you know, and but it's giving us the information that we need to be able to show progress. That's the DIPLS to me is showing progress, where the other I'm using to guide my instruction.
Does your quantifiable stuff mesh with your subjective stuff? Mm-hmm. Okay, so you're happy with it.
Yeah, in the end, yes.
You're getting good numbers.
So you don't have good readers who get anxiety when there's a stop clock.
And you know what? Those kids who do, I have a whole other list of kids who are, what do I call them? I have a whole other calendar in my room. That are progress monitors that are not, they're tier one kids, but they didn't do so good on that one day test, and they've never been in AIS before. So I pull them in once a month just to show, just to prove that they are fine. Just because that one day they didn't do well, and I've never seen them in AIS before, I'm not going to pull them in on one bad testing day. I'm giving them a chance and letting them show to me that they can keep, that they are fine. If that number isn't continue to be fine, then there's something more. But I double check those kids too.
Well,
I was just going to add what Kelly said about the time for the testing. The reading teachers and Stephanie helped them a lot, I know, tested all the kids by themselves. The classroom teachers are not involved in the testing at this point.
Well, you did.
So we didn't have AIS reading for that period of time. But in the future, we're going to be trained to be able to do the testing on our own. So then that will not
be integrated into the day.
Yes, yes. So that will be helpful, I think, when that happens, since the time won't be taken away from the AIS reading.
And that's another piece, the training and the consistency of the training, that you run the DIBLS the same way each time you run them. But the classroom teachers do their own running records.
Yeah.
So they have to test as well. So there is a period of 2 weeks where we're like, testing today.
Now, do the kids get anxious when you run that?
They're like, yay, a minute. And then they get to teach for 1 minute. They're like, okay.
Some of it is kind of fun. It's not fun for you because you have to listen to the same passage over and over. But I think for the kids, it might be read for a minute.
Speaking.
Well, thank you for coming.
Thank you.
I know Stephanie
much.
Has to get home to her family, as does Kelly.
To the three ladies in the back for support.
And they have done so much work. Truly. And changed it and revised it and added to it and checked the numbers. And is it perfect? No, but in a year, we've come such a long way with this. And I feel strongly that we will start seeing results from it. Well, Stephanie said something so telling when you first started the conversation, and that was just moving to that 90-minute reading block without changing instruction should improve right off the bat. So we started that as of scheduling this year. Okay, I'll be 5 minutes on the school report card. Sorry. Okay, so if you can go to the school report card in your... Is this elementary?
No. 4.2.
4.3. I have my own here. And I'm on the first page, the accountability and overview report. When Tammy and I were talking about how we're going to report on this report card, we came up with the word standalone, and it is kind of a standalone report card. It's not the same as any report card we've really dealt with before, because there had been so many changes. And in the past, you would get your report card in the summer after the test. And we did not get this. We were not able to release this report card until, I believe it was February 17th, because remember I had called you, we were going to put it on the website, and then there were again some last minute changes. So the things that I was telling you about in September have a big impact on what's going on with this report card, the things like the changes in cut scores. On page 2, it's interesting information. It's enrollment information, and you'll see from 07, 08 to 09, 010, we do have a pretty steady decline in enrollment, but there have been some bursts. Our kindergarten class size was pretty big last year. The average class size, 07, 08, 08, 09, and 09, 10, was pretty small. Next year, the report you'll see, our class sizes are larger. So I think that will show up as interesting. Page 3 tells us a little bit about the demographic factors like free lunch, free and reduced price lunches. And if you look, 09, 10, 21%. So from 07, 08, we went from, well, across the board, 19 to 21 for free lunch, and then 12, 15, 12 for reduced price lunch. And I know that's something that can sometimes be underreported. And those all factor in. On page 4 tells us about the teacher and staff qualifications. And again, Cambridge is interesting because of a couple of points. At the elementary, we have nobody teaching out of their certification area. We also have, if you look at that, 1, 2, 3 down, percent with fewer than 3 years of experience. Last year, 2% of our teachers had fewer than 3 years of experience. So that says we have a pretty experienced, seasoned staff here. The rest of that is comparisons to other similar districts. Teacher turnover rate shows that it's a stable district with regard to teachers. And then staff counts are the numbers other than teachers. The other professional staff, where it reads number 2, that would be the guidance counselor and the school psychologist. And then the principal is me. Pages 5 through, I guess it would be 10, talk about the accountability and how it works. So there's good news and there's good news and there's a little bad news. Overall, the elementary school remains a school in good standing in ELA, math, and science. And if you're on page 10, you can see the student groups, and the check marks show that we had made AYP, which is adequate progress on each measure. The area where there's a concern, if you are looking at other groups, students with disabilities. Are we on page 10 there? Okay. And that's definitely a concern, and when I saw it, I panicked. I'm a little less panicked now because there were a number of factors that played into that. Two things happened with the change in cut scores. We had a change in cut scores, which made it more difficult to score above a 2 on these tests. And also something called the 34-point rule. Up until this year in New York State, if you had 95% of your students with disabilities participating in the exam and you made AYP in each other area, you basically got 34 points. So we were always able to make it with the 34-point rule. What ended up happening with this is, and I think this is part of the reason why it took so long to get the reports out, New York State has kind of taken a step back. And we've recently got a memo that they're going to restructure this so students with disabilities groups can make AYP. They say they're going to change the trajectory. Our goals. And I have those memos if you want. I can share them as well.
elementary and middle level mathematics on page 12, in each group, including students.
So explain to me why mathematics gets checked and English gets the X.
Because there was no problem with mathematics. The scores on mathematics with students with disabilities, they made
AYP. Okay.
Yeah, they were fine.
No, I know. That's why I was
One of the things that we actually had a conversation about just last week with Stephanie when we were talking about this, and Scott Rice had told me that this was going to be an issue. Towards the end of the year last year, we had talked about it. He said, the 34-point rule is going away, so it's going to play a role in students with disabilities. And Stephanie and I were talking about it, and it's something we have to work out with the schedule, because that 90-minute reading block, sometimes a student with disability isn't getting all of that because they may be pulled out for speech or OT or PT or something along those lines. So actually on April 5th, Stephanie and the special education teachers and Kathy Fields and myself were going to meet to try to address that for next year, just before they write their IEPs for next year. How can we work their schedules to get more reading time in their schedules? Because that is the problem. It's reading. You need to know how to read on these tests. And if you're reading below grade level, slightly below grade level, you can do okay. If you're reading pretty far below grade level, you're definitely going to struggle on the ELA test. And the test is changing this year. Instead of third grade and fifth grade formerly had a two-day test, it's now going to be a three-day test. More reading passages, more listening. They've extended the length of the ELA tests.
Adjusted the safe harbor.
They've adjusted. If you look, if you're on page 11, and you see the safe harbor target for 09-10 on page 11, was 138 next year. They've adjusted it down. Mm-hmm. For this year's. Well.
It's an interesting adjustment of the rubric to get it down to almost half. That is telling why we had such a problem. They had originally, embargoed the school report card until the 10th of February. I was all ready to release it through the website, go ahead with it. And Colleen called me up and said that the latest email, it's not allowed to be released before the 17th. So they still were making tweaks the last week.
Here's a quote from the document. A consequence of these new higher achievement standards is that fewer students are now proficient in elementary and middle level ELA and math. Therefore, New York State needs to change the trajectory. It has established for the percentage of students expected to be proficient each year between now and 2013 for purposes of making AYP determinations. So they basically reset the performance index from a 167 to 122 for grades 3 through 8 ELA and from 151 to 137 for mathematics with annual equal increments to reach 200 by 2013. So they've gone back and kind of refigured what they need to do. I mean, we're not the only district facing this. I don't like the fact that, we're facing it at all. And we need to address it no matter what, because they want us at 200 by 2013. So we definitely need to show growth between now and 2013. Back to math. Okay, we're good on math. And then on page 13, you can see the elementary and middle level science. And again, we remain in good standing, making AYP with all accountability groups for science as well.
Is the goal 200 for science as well?
I honestly don't know. I haven't received anything regarding science.
And math, students ask, because currently with the special ed, it probably comes within the reading
So with the math exams, are there no word problems? Is that perhaps why? You know, how do they?
There are word problems, but if a student has the accommodation that says test read, a student that has a test read accommodation cannot get the ELA test read to them because that's a reading test. So if I'm a student and I have test read, you can read me the math test, you can read me the science test, and the old social studies test, you could read that.
So that's why you...
But not for the ELA. There is no special education accommodation that says that test can be read. So those students basically have to tackle it on their own. Well, it's a reading test. So I know, it doesn't seem right. But it is what it is. And it says in every administration manual, these tests cannot be read. I'm good. Everything else on my report. Sorry.
So, Colleen, the next 45 pages here, it looks like from 08 to 09 up to 09-10, we've done worse. Well, is that because they changed the...
They changed all the cut scores. If you look at the mean scale score, that's the only thing you can really compare with. So in some areas, we went up...
Right here.
So if you're looking at the graphs, for example, on page 15, it's in the upper left corner. So I'm on ELA grade 3. I have the 09 mean scale score was 671, and the 10 was 674.
Okay.
But next year, we won't be able to compare it to this year's either, because the test is changing. So that's why we kept using the word standalone. So for example, third grade, which always had a two-day test, now has a third section on their test. So the comparison is not valid. It's just an odd year. It's an odd year. We've changed the requirements. It's still informative.
You don't have to apologize for it. It's just the way it is.
A couple other things. Sorry, I'm flipping around. I had to have my own little highlighted piece. Okay. We are still collecting information from incoming kindergartners. If you know of anyone, please tell them to call. Because last summer we had well over 10, I think closer to 20 parents enrolled. So it's helpful if anybody knows of anybody that's an incoming kindergarten. Thank you to the PTP for Jack and the Beanstalk. That was a fun opera. Woody Strobeck was here on Friday, which was also very entertaining. On the 22nd, Barbara McCarthy did a wonderful storytelling. Dottie Sundquist did a music in our schools presentation as well last week on the 22nd. Anna Lou Gorman has been doing a wonderful job in the school placing student art in all the various cases and on the walls. And the Washington County Drug and Alcohol person that was here last, there might have been two meetings ago, she is going to do some of her classroom lessons for fourth and fifth grade.
I'm going to be more brief because a lot of the things about the school report card, They're very similar. A lot of the demographic information is similar in the secondary report card. The one place where I did see a pretty significant change, if you're looking on, it's 4.31, it's page 4 of the secondary report. A couple of things that are different. Colleen pointed out that there was 2% of the elementary staff that had fewer than 3 years experience. That is a little bit different at the secondary. We don't have quite as seasoned staff as Colleen does. We have 13% of ours as reported last year. And the only other piece that I saw on the demographic factors is actually on the preceding page, on page 3, the student stability number, which for elementary was very, very stable. And you can see that in 07, 08, we're at 99%, 09, we go to 10, it's 100%. And then you see that we're only 79% I attributed that largely due to the fact that we're now doing our best, although sometimes it's an estimate, of reporting our McKinney-Vento homeless students. So all the students that are doubled up, family members living with other family members, students who are unaccompanied minors, maybe living with another family who's not necessarily their parent or guardian, we're tracking that much more effectively, I think, than we did in the past. So it looks like we have a high degree of students moving in and out, which is not necessarily the case. I think it's because we're tracking our numbers a little bit better in terms of our McKinney-Vento students.
Would that really, though, affect 21% of the students?
It affects a lot of them, because if you think about the families that we would say homelessness, you sort of have a certain image, but mom and dad, you know, are moved in with grandma. That's considered homelessness. Families that are doubled up, brothers and sisters who move in with, you know, their siblings and move out of mom and dad's house, those are considered unaccompanied minors. So we have a lot of scenarios that we wouldn't consider to be homelessness that by definition really are homeless students.
Do you think that coincides with economic issues?
I think, yeah, families who are moving in with other family members, I think that has a lot to do with current economic times. And I also think that a lot of that has been underreported in the past. And it is hard to track, you know, knowing who's moving, who's lost their residence, who's moving in with grandma because there's been a falling out at home. I mean, some of it's anecdotal, but there's a lot of it that, you know, we're trying to get at through gathering information from kids as they bring it forward, which has certainly had an impact on our free and reduced lunch numbers as well. Because those students would, if they're under the umbrella of McKinney-Vento status, they would receive free and reduced lunch.
Our population is becoming more knowledgeable as to what it means to be homeless.
Right.
So if somebody is homeless and is out of our district within a certain mile range, we have to go get them and bring them back if they want to come back. So if they're aware of that, they will tell us. So more people are making that known. Or other situations where if it may be somebody building a house and we've been with grandma for a while, technically there's no homeless.
Right.
We wouldn't meet what we would normally see or think as homeless, but still to the letter of the law.
I'd like
to ask on enrollment, and I'm sure you don't have the actual reason, but I mean, you look, that's a huge decrease in population. And I mean, if you sit there and you look at seventh grade, we're now ninth graders. See, you're moving into, you know what I mean?
Right.
In the ninth grade, they're now in 11th, we've lost 50, you know, 10. Why, any reason why we're losing so many students?
I think a lot of districts are facing similar circumstances
as far as... Where are they going? Any idea? Are they private? Are they in the district?
These students are not... Our BOCES kids who attend for CTE half-day programs are counted in our numbers, but some of them might be out-of-district placements, although I know that that number has declined, which doesn't really explain this. But we do have, I think, a lot of upstate New York schools are facing similar issues in terms of enrollment. And it's not, you know, obviously not just a secondary issue, it's happening across the board.
Right, because I mean, 60 students in 2 years.
Right.
That's a lot.
If you go diagonally, though, it's not as bad.
Well,
because technically the 07, 08 seventh graders are the ninth graders, and 68 to 63 is not as bad.
Well, 68 to 63, so you lost 5, and you go 80 to, they stayed the same. 105. I mean, that's what I was doing. You know, like, the ninth grade, we're now juniors, we lost 10 kids there. You know, actually, 11th grade, they're gone.
Right, the surprising part in that trend is, okay, you can. Potentially, the you know, the over 16, you can see a drop, but that's not it. This is consistent
throughout each grade level.
And I think as the smaller elementary classes push up through, that's part of
this. No, but classes are reducing.
Right.
People, students are leaving.
The cohort is
shrinking. Yes. As you move into from the enrollment data and the teacher qualifications, and we get into some of the actual reporting on the assessments, we did make AYP in all of our subgroups and in mathematics. 7 and 8 in ELA, 7 and 8, science, 8th grade, and social studies, 8th grade. And as Colleen said, it's very difficult to compare them to our old numbers unless you're comparing those mean scores and not the 1s, 2s, 3s, and 4s because of the change in the cut score. But it's also very difficult to compare and project for next year because we had similar changes in our tests in terms of the nature of the tests, the length of the test. And in the case of social studies 8, there won't be a test. So it is a standalone year as far as comparing old scores to previous exams and then projecting forward how we're going to compare with changes in the formats of the test. And then kind of extrapolating a little further down the road when we get into Common Core standards and those assessments that are related, we're not going to be able to compare. It's really going to be apples and oranges at that point. But we did make AYP, which is the satisfactory progress of students striving for 3s and 4s. That's what's driving the AYP number is students moving toward 3s and 4s who might not have been there in the past. The other significant piece that I think is coming down the road in terms of the assessments, like I said, we are seeing this year the elimination of the Social Studies 8 test. And as we move toward Common Core standards, I think we'll probably see some more of those types of things. As we're seeing in 8th grade also, they're eliminating the second language proficiency exam. They're starting to move some things around there to, I think, get ready for those Common Core assessments that are coming down the pike. Are there any questions on the report card before?
I just have a question.
Sure.
On the teacher qualification.
Mm-hmm.
Percentage of teachers teaching out of certificate. What do we do that for? Are they a core science teacher or science and they're teaching English? I don't know. Help me.
It's usually not that drastic. It may be, for instance, in the case of some of the sciences, that could happen. You know, maybe we offer one section of physics. So having a certified physics teacher necessarily for that one section may not happen. We may have a teacher teach outside of certification area for that particular one section.
So it's pretty much they're staying within their field, perhaps just teaching a different.
Right.
Teach one.
You can teach, yes. Technically, you can teach one outside your certification area. So that may explain some of that.
And then, taught without appropriate certification. Is that just people waiting either in the process of?
And there have been teachers who have applied for extensions of certifications and those types of things who may not have all of the certifications required for what they're currently teaching.
But they still have got an extension that allows them to still.
Right. Any other on the report card? Just to highlight some things that are coming up, the Drama Club presentation on April 7th, 8th, and 9th. The kids will be presenting Fame. April 14th, there's a Latin Club field trip to New York City. May 14th is the date of the prom that will be held at Fort William Henry, and then the after prom events at the Adventure Raceway. And if you recall from the February 28th board meeting, Amy Malloy from the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention came and did a presentation. She'll be doing a very similar presentation to our 12th grade social studies classes. She'll be going into those sections and discussing some of the same issues that she presented to the board at the February 28th meeting. We decided to go with the seniors. I know Ms. Hall did a lot of work with her health classes. Most of whom are not, those kids are not seniors. A lot of seniors have already taken health in the high school. So we thought we would address that group because we feel like we might miss them if that is being presented in the health curriculum. So that's gonna happen, actually we have a firm date now of April 6th. I was waiting for her to get back to us with a date that she could come, but that will be happening on April 6th.
Now is the season where you see a lot of teenage students and cars or drinkers. Do we do any SAD or anything at this time of year? It seems to be the time of year where...
I know the prom advisors do that to some degree as far as a SAD presentation or something like that. I don't believe there has been in the past anything formalized, but that's something that we can work with the prom advisors on.
Right. I think, with prom and graduation.
Absolutely.
Do we just remind them mm-hmm. of safety?
Yep.
Okay.
I have really nothing to add to my treasurer's report. I'll entertain any questions. February is a pretty boring month for lack of the money goes out, but it doesn't come in. March starts our savings payments, and without putting away next month, they're on time. So, so far, there's been no cuts, nothing being held back. We still don't know about anything with the savings. It said something may come out today, but as of 6:40, still nothing.
How are we doing with that bus situation? Do we want to remind people?
Oh, that's right. Let's see. Poor Billy had to go get two buses today. One broke down this morning, one broke down this afternoon. So I just can't stress enough the need for the buses. That proposition, I know it's in here, as an action item. And basically, bringing this proposition to the voters. The net effect is $49,000 change for two 66 passenger buses in the Suburban.
Versus the cost to repair.
All those costs to repair. But to get those new buses, that's the net effect of the budget. Less than 1%. Yeah.
That proposition uses the word purchase again. Is that something we have to use rather than replace?
So it's replace.
That's replace.
Oh.
It does say purchase, but
because when I first did it up, I used replace first. But then, like when Vince Quick looked at it, he goes, what, we're buying three? And I said, okay, that just tells me that the people are going to look at it and say, what, we're buying three, but we're not. So I wanted to put that we're buying two to replace three. But,
it does say purchase.
It
jumped out at me when I read it the first time.
What, the purchase?
We're buying three. That was my first impression. I went back and read it. Twice.
The original one said replacing three buses, and I thought we were buying three, but to go on, that's why we switched it to this one.
Yeah, because that's how I actually had it the first time I switched it around.
Is it possible next month to kind of get an idea of how much we've been spending to repair and tow in all these buses so people realize the value?
Yep. I guess the question is, do we want to change that proposition? It is an action item.
Does it have to be approved tonight?
Yes, because it has to be advertised.
I have to go over, click a button, and send it over to the paper.
The original wording said replacing three buses, and I read that as we're going to buy three buses. That's why I said purchase two, replacing three.
It almost comes down to how this would appear in print.
Yep.
Because the way it's written right now, three buses jumped out of it. I think we were buying three buses. And they went back in. Somebody's got to read it quick.
Well, maybe we have a word sentence right here. So part of it is that we're connecting too closely the three passenger buses to the acquisition. So if you separate the replacement you put as later in the as a sentence, that's inside later that says, oh, and by the way, these two passenger buses will replace three dysfunctional 66 passenger buses.
So this is all one sentence.
Very long sentence. Yeah.
The resolution is
this would be the resolution is ridiculous. So do you want to? The other option is you take out the replacement part, but I guess that's.
No, that's
if we want to communicate that to
I would like to see this clearly, because as Beth was saying, $49,000 is not a paltry sum, but it's not a lot of money to pay for three new vehicles, and we will almost certainly spend more than that servicing and repairing these vehicles if we don't replace them. and not have the new vehicle, which is what's happening now. And I think a lot of people tend to vote against this property because they just see purchase new buses. We don't need new buses. The buses I see are fine. That, you know, I apologize for making a mistake of this, but I do think it's critical.
What if we said authorized to replace two buses and then down in, the most important thing is that you, you know, the fact that it will be a tax upon the levy. So be authorized to replace
and keep your children safe.
Any tips from the audience?
No adjectives or less?
Yeah. No adjectives. New shiny versus
it's the crazy
glossy broken.
Just the indicating that they are not functioning well.
Yeah, are we allowed to say that?
Can you put in
well,
the cost
they are functioning, but very poorly.
Can you put in there how much it's cost us to replace
no.
the, or
no,
fix the...
No,
yeah.
No, because the total impact of the district has to be expressed, not the annual.
And you're saying the phrase, purposes of replacing three buses has to be in there?
Yeah, we have to say that we're getting rid of, we have to have permission to get rid of the three.
And if we say replace three 66 passenger buses, it seems like we're buying three new ones.
That's what
we're
my
actually,
comment was.
Right, I got you. That's where we're stuck. But if we say replace two.
Rather, change replace with retire.
Maybe that's a good one. Retire three passenger, three.
All the propositions that passed last year used the word replace.
You mean
our
hang up
is the fact that we are only buying two and getting rid of three. That's our hang up this year. Usually it's one for one.
Right.
We consolidated some runs. There are, one of these buses are beyond DOT.
Well, what if we say dispose of three 66 passenger buses? And replace them with two 66 passenger buses and one Suburban.
I like that.
Yeah,
Suburban.
Yeah.
So, what about the words replacing three of ill repair?
Well, dispose of, like,
dispose of.
That's pretty clear. Be authorized to dispose.
Dispose of three 66 passenger buses and replace them with two 66 passenger buses. Very simple and clear.
When we get to that part of the agenda, we'll read that back.
More of us.
Nominate you.
We'll make sure we have that.
Okay, let's put them aside. Beth, anything else?
No, so then I'll just take the questions as the change to the audit.
Okay, board. Start down to Deb tonight.
Let's see. I attended a safety committee meeting, and basically, Mr. Duren expressed the need and safety issues that went through on a proposition, a capital project that failed, letting us know the ventilation systems and such, and pretty much going over everything in the capital project and how long. They've been working on that, not just as a committee, but as the buildings and grounds, and addressing the needs of these without any incidents happening. Also, I guess I wanted to say, I understand we have wood chalk issues again. I'm hoping that we don't.
Where are they?
Wood chalk, groundhogs, whatever you want to call them. I just hope we don't have live traps in any holes that. To be in the field where children may. How we're going to address that issue. I'd like to congratulate the girls' varsity basketball team as well as the boys' varsity basketball team on a successful season, and very proud of where they've gone. That's all I have.
Howard?
I just mentioned that a couple of weeks ago I had a really unique opportunity to come in. Spend 3 days with the fifth grade kids doing a microscope unit. And it was kind of a supplement to a unit that they did at the beginning of the year on cells. Actually, they should have been done in reverse, but at least we got them done. And the kids got a very good introduction to using microscopes, and the teachers got some in-service training. We started out with day one with a lab that I built for them on the parts of the microscope and lab safety. On day two, we did some dry mounts. They looked at various objects that we provided for them in the lab. And on day three, we did some wet mounts with some microscopic eosinophil animals that I ordered from Ward's and some pond water. And the kids crossed hairs off of each other's heads and looked at all kinds of neat things. And I think it was a wonderful opportunity for these kids to be able to use one of our science rooms over here. I also would like to thank Mrs. Lester for coming in, because she came in several times over the experience. And I think the kids had a great time. We have a really nice plant unit ready for the kids to go in the spring. We did animals in the fall with all the fourth grade. We have 35 kids who have signed up for a summer science enrichment program, and hopefully we'll be able to do that. If everybody gets out and votes for the budget, we'll get that set for the kids. Hopefully also a fourth grade lab program to educate some of the teachers in some lab methods, and to give the fourth grade kids who participate a leg up into the fifth grade. So it'll be geared for all levels of kids. And it's been fun working with the kids all year, and I appreciate all the teachers who have asked me to come in. There have been a few reticent ones, but we'll get them in the next sooner or later.
I forgot to add one more thing. And I wanted to obviously thank Howard Romack for all that he does for our school and that he gives back to the kids. And I had a conversation with a seventh grader, which I think applies to many students. We're fortunate enough to have Howard do what he does at no cost to the district and bring a lot to our children. But I had a student, a birthday party, tell me that Howard Romack is an icon, and he looks up to you and respects you. And I know there are many more children who feel that way, and I appreciate what you do for our district.
It's a nice, unexpected comment. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lester, for leading that excellent literacy program. Really, really love hearing about that. And that's it. Thanks.
A ton of work by the teachers, honestly.
No, it's great.
They've done a lot of work. Kelly Tolman has...
Yeah, I would second that. That's very exciting to see. It's actually great that some of the elementary teachers came.
Very briefly, I attended the postmortem business building committee meeting on the 23rd. And the architect, and it was a far-reaching discussion on what to do or not to do. And the committee is awaiting a report from the architect and the building and ground supervisor, Rudd, on compiling a list of what they think is needed to keep the building running. And we'll decide on whether we put that back out to the community.
The next meeting is April 6th. So.
So the committee will hear more on this section. Okay, there's no old business according to this agenda, so let's move on to new business. We have a consent agenda, which I recommend for approval. This is for personnel and consent agenda for new business, and I move it for discussion. Deb, that's a second.
Yeah.
Okay, any comments? It's on page 1.4.
I think they want to.
And there's also carryover to the event.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. There's a couple more items on the agenda.
On 1.4, it refers to July 5th as the reorganizational meeting. On the addendum, it says that it's the 7th, so we'll go with the 7th, not the 5th.
Can we comment?
Yep.
I just wanted to bring out Marie Starr and thank her for her years of service. To the district. I'm pretty sure she's well up in 25 years.
She said 25 or
25, yeah. So thank her for her years of service to the district, and obviously congratulate Cheryl Benson.
And I see the Latin club is going hither and yon, and Spanish club is going likewise. So good. Any other comments? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, we have several items that are related to the Comptroller's Office audit, and
I would appreciate it if Vince would just give another 60-second explanation of what that was. Or Beth?
I said Beth's in charge of that one.
Okay.
We were contacted last year. New York State came in last summer and audited the affairs of the business office. Basically, they just recommended that there was some segregation of duties among the four personnel.
This is something they do periodically. This is not
yes.
something they did because of...
Oh, no, nothing. Okay. Nothing. We were one of the first districts audited when the governor's five-point agenda came out. And I really think they weren't sure what they were doing yet, how they were going to approach things. So I think once they started to fine-tune how they were doing their audits, they went back to revisit some of the earlier ones because, you know, it's ironic that back in 2006 they don't have a problem with how we do things, but now in 2010 they do. But
it's
exactly nothing's
the same
changed.
Way in that way.
Right. So they said we were in the paper because of we were having some layoffs, but I don't see why you would audit somebody if they're in layoffs.
The comptroller is supposed to be around every 5 years.
What were the segregated? What duties were segregated?
Well, with the fund accounting, we have various funds. In our office, that I said they seem to be an island. So one person would do start to finish. So now we have an overlap. So somebody's taking in the cash, they won't do the bank reconciliation. Another person will do their reconciliation. So now we kind of hand off work and segregate them.
This is in response to several school districts who really fell down.
Right.
The original ones down in Roslyn.
Yeah, Roslyn and Floyd. There was a lot of fever going on, so now watching this.
This is interesting because when this all came about, I had a personal letter from the auditors made out to me, and I read it through and I said, well, what do I do now? So I called Beth at the school and I said, this letter is directed to me. Do I have to do any segregation duties? She explained to me and said, you're all right. Don't worry about it. It's already been done. So, I don't know how many of the board members got those letters, but it's a little bit frightening.
Hmm. Oh, so you mean, so now I segregated my home duties for nothing?
Did you get that?
Okay, and before I read these, although Beth had to come up with some new job descriptions and segregation duties, in the other breath, they said they didn't find anything wrong.
Right, I thought it was.
Yeah, it was a clean report.
It was a
clean
report,
but it's preventive maintenance, basically.
Right.
Okay, I'm going to read B, C, D, and E, and we'll do those all together. So I recommend approval of to accept the audit report for 2009-10 fiscal year as prepared by the New York State Comptroller's Office.
Second.
I'm just going to read them all together.
Okay.
Recommend board approval of the following job descriptions of senior account clerk, accounts payable, and senior account clerk payroll as recommended by the state audit committee during a recent review of business office. Recommend the board rescind the appointment of Lynn McNeil as purchasing agent and appoint Beth Coates as per the recommendation of the state controller's office for the remainder of the 2010 school year. And finally, recommend the board appoint Kate Madison, assistant administrator for WinCap Financial Software, as per the recommendation of the state controller's office for the remainder of the 2010-11 school year. And you want to accept that?
Second.
Okay. All four of those.
Okay. There's no additional salaries related to any of this.
No.
Just the change.
Right.
Change of responsibilities.
Right.
Indeed. All those in favor? I'm sorry. Any more discussion? All those in favor? Okay. Kate, do you know how to do the WinCap financial software?
I'm learning.
You only need to know how to turn it on, turn it off.
Okay, item F, recommend approval of the propositions to be placed on the ballot at the annual budget vote election to be held on May 17, 2011. Number one is public library proposition, show appropriation of $37,250 to be made in the 2011-12 budget. Library, sum to be raised by the levy of a tax upon the taxable property of the Cambridge Central School District, and we'll go with the two at the same time. The bus purchase proposition, and Paul, can you do that, please, in the revised form?
Shall the Board of Education be authorized to dispose of 366 passenger buses and replace them with one Suburban and 266 passenger buses for pupil transportation at a maximum trade price not to exceed $248,310 be raised by the levy upon the tax upon the taxable property of said school district and collecting the annual installments as provided by Section 416 of the Education Law in anticipation of such tax obligations of said school.
Second?
Second.
Any further discussion? As Beth said, this is going to be, it's actually going to cost us $49,000 for two buses and a Suburban.
That's the net effect on the 11-12 budget.
That's what it's going to cost.
Because of the way we borrow.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Okay.
Item G, recommend approval of the following resolution. It is hereby resolved that the Board of Education accept the resignation of Christopher Signor as high school principal effective May 31, 2011, and authorizes the superintendent and president of the board to execute said agreement on behalf of the district.
Second?
Second.
Any discussion?
Thank Mr. Signor first time in the district.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Recommend approval of the following resolution. It is hereby resolved that effective immediately, Tammy Silvernell is appointed as acting high school principal for the remainder of the 2010-11 school year.
Second.
Second.
Deb, second. Discussion.
Thank you, Tim. Welcome.
Or condolences.
Whatever you want.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Further on to Tammy's career here. Recommend the board appoint Tammy Silvernell as controller for extra classroom activity for the remainder of the 2010-11 school year, and recommend the board appoint Tammy Silvernell as Title IX officer for the remainder of the 2010-11 school year. Very second again. Any discussion? All those in favor? Recommend the board approve the leave of absence for Anthony Bochette as a social studies teacher for the remainder of the 2010-11 school year beginning March 24, 2011 and ending on June 30, 2011 for the purpose of filling the position of acting assistant principal.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
No opposed. And further on, Tony, recommend the board appoint Anthony Rochette as acting assistant principal for the remainder of the 2010-11 school year.
Second.
Discussion?
Thank you, Tony.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Congratulations. We have some musical instruments to get rid of, and I will not read each one individually, but there's five or six of them, and I recommend we declare the file them as all surplus.
Second.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
And before I read this or describe this, what is this all about?
This is the seeker. Whenever you do a building project, and we have the $100,000 project that we're doing, we have to say that there is no effect on the environment. And since this is within the building, there is no. What we're looking at doing is replacing doors and hardware, so it has no effect on the environment. But the state now has this as one of the requirements that you have to do for all projects.
Okay, the board can read it. Is there anyone out in the audience that would like to have them read this to? Please say no. Thank you. I move your approval. All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Thank you, board. Thank you, the audience.
I stand corrected on the amendment. We have to do that because we have to have it back to the closing by the 25th, and we will meet after they close.
So okay.
We have to do that.
So we have an item.
So that would be item
yeah,
that's what I said.
This is on the addendum. Okay, do they have that?
Yes.
Yeah. Recommend approval of the following resolution. Be it resolved, the Board of Cooperative Educational Services of Washington, Saratoga, Warren, Hamilton, Essex counties is authorized to expend the sum set forth in the administrative budget in the total amount of $5,595,326 during the school year 2011-12.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Can we have some discussion?
Go ahead.
Just a quick question. This is, we're authorizing the BOCES to spend the money?
We, as a component school district, we have to I've never known it in that past.
What's the total?
The total BOCES budget? You know?
For their total budget?
Well, yeah, I'm saying if they've got $5.5 million in administrative.
I know.
Crazy number.
Yeah.
It's up.
It has to be probably 25, with all the CTE programs and stuff. We'll find out.
Any more comments? Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
We have one last item. Unfortunately, we have to recommend that the results of the special vote held on March 22nd, 2011 are accepted.
I think they are seconded.
And they are here.
I gave you.
Total yes votes for the capital improvement project for 416, the total no votes for 647. All those in favor?
Aye.
None opposed. We have another public comment period.
One thing, just on the PPP, just wanted to let you guys know that we paid for Woody Strobe for probably a great performance.
Okay. They do a nice job. If you ever have an opportunity to come in, they're all retired teachers. Shouldn't say all, most of them are. I think the one gentleman who plays the drums is not.
It's the same show, the similar show that they did last year, and the kids love it.
What is the music?
It's Dixieland.
It is
and the one guy does.
This is my kids.
Louis
my
Armstrong.
Likes
I don't know. He does a low dolly. It's terrific. It's a lot of fun.
He does do a lesson that too. He takes a string and shows the different ways and music and stuff. And,
I heard.
Explains how I know it's just small. He really does an extra.
Okay, we are going to adjourn the regular meeting and move into executive session. We will not return. We will take no action in the executive session.
Second.
All those in favor of adjourning?